of the air quality. And we've been also working really closely with our representative on South Coast Air Quality Management District, Supervisor Perez, as well, has been instrumental. But very briefly, as a result of the advocacy efforts by you all here, South Coast has added a monitor in Cathedral City that's been tallying of just how bad the region has been impacted by Tropical Storm Hillary. What we've seen there is just in that monitor went in September of last year. And this spring season, during the festival season, that monitor provided some very critical data for us to really reinforce to South Coast with our own data how bad it's been out here. And in the month of April, we saw some days around the tropical, around the festival season that were way above the health standards. And that can have a very negative impact to our economic development. We're a tourism and economy. And so it's obviously very important to keep track of that. And in the month of March of this year, the average PM10 in the air exceeded the federal health standard for that entire month of March. So that was very, very stark, very bleak news for us, but it has been instrumental in being able to communicate South Coast with their own data how bad it's been. And so they are showing more interest, and they have at least indicated that there is something here that is not normal. In addition to the Cathedral City monitor, there is going to be a forthcoming data from a camera that South Coast is placed at Mount San Jacinto. So they are also going to do a spectral analysis. So we should hear more on that. But that was also a result of advocacy efforts. They also adjusted the wind speed modeling for alerts that used to be at 20 miles per hour. They reduced it down to 13 miles per hour to be able to get notifications out to the community. And we've also engaged with stakeholders on this issue. It's been the topic of discussion. It's going to be discussed today at Desert Healthcare District's conference. And Supervisor Perez is working on a November health summit as well, where we're going to be able to focus in on this issue and have discussions with key stakeholders. CVAG also coordinated efforts with FEMA to make sure the cities were reimbursed for funds as a result of Tropical Storm Hillary. So we coordinate all those efforts. And at the end of the day, this goes to ensuring health and safety and protecting our tourism economy and our quality of life for Coachella Valley. So just wanted to give you a quick update, the monitoring Cathedral City, the spectral analysis that's going to be forthcoming, and the November health summit that's going to take place, a dust summit as well. So just want to provide those high level points on behalf of Tom. I'm sure we'll be back with an agenda item in the future to discuss this further, but happy to answer any questions.
Do you have a date for that summit?
We're looking at November 6. Thank you, Councilmember.
Then I think one question, I know you might not have the answer on the spot, but how are we tracking the variable of the shrinking Salton Sea and the impact on the air quality in the valley? Is that something that we're also have some methodology around there?
We are keeping an eye on that closely, but we do know that the impacts here in the Coachella Valley, at least from our analysis, are attributed to Tropical Storm Hillary, and we have seen the emissivity of the dust coming in from the Whitewater Wash area, particularly the conservation area by Indian Canyon. We have some footage, even pictures by Supervisor Perez driving in June of this year. That shows how bad the conditions are in that part of the valley. But as part of just a larger, broader conversation on air quality, we are keeping tabs on Salton Sea as we typically do as part of the ENS duties and keeping the committee informed. There was a recent report that was released by Pacific Institute, Michael Cohen, who's long been monitoring the health and public health, environmental, and habitat impacts at the Salton Sea. That report essentially says that a lot of the dust in that area is coming from other sources other than the playa at the Salton Sea. And they're moving towards a strategy that's focused more on protecting people where they live.
Also, for our minutes, I do want to recognize that Councilmember Rican has joined us in the meeting.
Good question. We had monitors in Palm Springs and in Indio replace the Indio disappearing monitor. So is the Cathedral City the additional one post-storm that we advocated? And then there, we also had a report that they are doing a different type of monitoring out at the Salton Sea. Are we able to utilize that data as well?
They wanted to do a date on the composition of the dust out in Salton Sea. We haven't got an update from South Coast. That's one of the items that we'll be following up with them on.
And then and maybe you can't answer this, but I know that Supervisor Perez will be there this afternoon, correct, at the Desert Healthcare District Second Annual Environmental Health Summit. Is this a duplication in November? Similar speakers, different topic, or is it just another opportunity to gain additional awareness?
We will find out today. From what I see on the agenda today, there is a 2:30 session talking about air quality. Desert Healthcare District did put out some grant funds for some public health efforts, and so there'll be an update on that. And then there is going to be a broader conversation on public health and the environmental impacts. And we assume that there'll probably be a pointed discussion on Tropical Storm Hillary. Given supervisors on that panel and his role in all of this. Jacob is going to be there. Ms. Travis is going to be there today, and we'll report back.
Their support as well. And then hopefully AQMD will be in attendance in November if there's going to be an additional summit option. So the collaboration could be met with the public that attends and we can continue to advocate for action and perhaps funds for mitigation efforts as you see them.
Definitely. Thank you. There.
To answer Mayor Evans' question really quick. For the Dust Summit, we will have AQMD staff there answering questions and also part of the conversation. We're also hoping to have some folks from Ag that will also talk about dust mitigation and how all of this is also impacting crops. So we do want to bring in a good group, and that's really his goal is to bring in a good group to talk about all of the impacts and not just agriculture and also our community, but also how it's impacting tourism. And so we really want to make sure it's kind of leveled out and balanced to have a good conversation. Thank you.
Thank you.
But and I mentioned this before. So the tribe, we have two air monitoring stations at the reservation, one that's down at our tribal land near West Shores, and we have one near the tribal office. So if you need any of that data, because I don't know if SQMD gives you any of that data, because I know we had that conversation last time. I keep bringing it up. So we also have those air monitors that we have years of data if you guys want that information as well.
Thank you.
And when you say you guys, that means who on our team that we're looking at from a air monitoring or data standpoint?
We have a team of folks at CVAG and ENS that are helping with the effort. So it's a team effort.
Excellent.
Any other committee member comments before we move on to consent calendar? All right, we will move on to consent calendar.
Move approval, La Quinta.
Motion from. All right, approval from La Quinta, second from Torres Martinez. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, thank you. We'll move on to our next item.
City of what?
Light?
Yes.
Yes. An IID?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Motion passes. And we'll move on to our next item. We have a presentation from the First Public Hydrogen Authority Municipal Hydrogen Utility. And we have Alexis Marin, I believe. Hi. Oh, there he is. Oh, Marino. Sorry.
Good afternoon, everyone. Apologies we couldn't be there in person. We had some travel conflicts, but it's great to see you all through the screen. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Wonderful. Well, I will start my presentation here. And we will jump right into it. So thank you for that introduction. Can you all see me on my screen?
Yes, we can see you there.
Wonderful. So my name is Alexis Marino. As mentioned, I am with First Public Hydrogen. I'm a managing director there, previously with the city of Lancaster, spent a decade with Lancaster focused on their clean energy efforts and standing up their CCA. So we have a long history there, along with the former city manager of Lancaster, Jason Cottle, who is the CEO for First Public. So what is First Public? Why are we here and having this conversation today? Well, First Public looks at things through a municipal lens. We have a shared goal here to bring together public agencies to find a way to integrate hydrogen into your communities, whether that's transit, stationary power, or any other use cases such as powering a neighborhood or warehousing. We're here to try to make it happen at an affordable cost. So at the end of the day, our goal is to remove any barriers to be able to deploy hydrogen into your spaces. And we do that through a municipal base lens. We also are focused on accelerating investments in your areas to be able to help developers get these projects off of the ground. So how did this start? Why did this start? Where did it come from? So Lancaster, having had over a decade of success in the clean energy space already, quickly realized that hydrogen was going to be a great solution for things that solar and battery could not handle. It was also a great solution for helping an overstressed grid, having an alternative energy source to help developers get off of the ground, to get neighborhoods power. There was a number of use cases where hydrogen just made sense, as well as looking at our fleet, both light duty and heavy duty. But what Lancaster quickly realized was that the hydrogen market and the hydrogen space was not friendly. It was very complicated, and having a small demand, you know, to be able to ramp up, the cost of hydrogen was just astronomical for us to get anything off of the ground. And so taking the CCA model, Lancaster partnered with the City of Industry to form a joint powers authority between the two cities to be able to tackle this problem. And so with that municipal hat on, said, let's go out into the hydrogen market together and see what we could do if we started aggregating demand, purchasing hydrogen together as one, opposed to all of these individual entities purchasing individually. So we are purpose-built to expand the hydrogen market to new users, both in mobility, power, and commercial. The other thing that this allows to happen is new development of hydrogen. So we know that there's only a certain amount available in the market today. However, if we want to continue to decarbonize and meet those goals, we're going to need a significant amount more of hydrogen, and we need it to be affordable. So what we found is that producers were having a really hard time aggregating demand and finding all of the use cases. They had these really great projects, these new developments. It meant jobs for the communities. It meant new investment, but they could not get the demand aggregated amongst cities. The volumes were just too small, or amongst transit agencies. Conversely, transit agencies, and some of you may have heard of these problems in the hydrogen market, they were getting unreliable contracts, delays in their hydrogen deliveries, or the cost they were seeing, $60 per kilogram. And so what we found is that by positioning ourselves in the middle of producers and suppliers, we can help both sides. We can have producers build confidence in their development that they'll have a single off-taker, and anyone looking to purchase hydrogen can purchase from one space and know that they're going to have a reliable source for it, and at a good cost. So we're here today to talk about the benefits for municipalities and how it makes sense to stand together when we're approaching this market. Our solutions, what we see, is to bring down investment risks. We can optimize delivery and logistics, competitive pricing. There's opportunities for partnership. There's opportunities for procurement. And we truly can work together to enter the market and meet any of the demands that you may have. As I mentioned at the beginning, it's not the friendliest of spaces when it comes to deploying hydrogen. There's a lot of questions. There's a lot of question marks on what technology to use. Are they a reliable source? Is this a good price? And so we wanted to have a central point that you could have all of those questions answered through this JPA. So why did we decide to do this? Well, as I mentioned, Lancaster saw a problem, and we knew that we had a solution for what we had done with CalChoice that now manages the energy portfolio for 8 cities. We had a model that worked. We knew that if we came together as cities and purchased in bulk, approached this together, that we could help aggregate that demand. We also knew that by providing a public space to see the pricing, to see what suppliers exist, we could hopefully bring down that cost. There should be no reason that we have transit agencies paying upwards of $60 and other transit agencies paying $16. We could provide some transparency in the market and work together to bring down the cost. Centralized procurement truly is the biggest benefit, though, and that's how we approach our CCA. And it helps so that if you're approaching hydrogen or looking at it as a solution, but you want to start small with a pilot project, you're not paying an astronomical amount for hydrogen to start with. So how do we do this? As I mentioned, we situate ourselves in the middle. Earlier this year, First Public Hydrogen ran an RFP that we ensured would be compliant for all parties involved to see what kind of production was out there and what the price looked like. And that's everything from green to gray hydrogen, everything from geologic to traditional electrolysis to SMR. So we found all of these producers that had different technologies. We got the pricing. We understand that now. And what we're in the process of doing is finding those offtake opportunities and working with cities, municipalities, transit agencies, ports to discuss what their needs are and how we could be a solution as a hydrogen provider or to just help the hydrogen market expand. So we do this by aggregating demand, help facilitating transactions between producers and suppliers, by optimizing delivery and infrastructure, and just de-risking the market overall, driving down the price. We do this through tailored procurement and individual conversations with each one of the agencies that we're working with so that we can understand what your needs are. We also have the opportunity for public-private partnerships. There are possibly developments that can't get off the ground in your areas that have energy constraints. They're looking at a few years before they can get an interconnection. Well, we can try to work together to either bridge that gap or find another solution using something like a fuel cell instead. And project development. What you're seeing here is a map. As I mentioned, we had an RFP earlier this year to identify where supply exists throughout California. And First Public Hydrogen being a statewide JPA, as you can see, we are up and down the map of California with supply and the responses that we received. So we are ready and prepared to have these conversations and to be able to provide pricing for what it could look like to transition. We do have a robust board made up of both industry and local government. We have Mayor Paris, who's the mayor of Lancaster, council member Noel Ruggles, who represents the city of industry, former speaker Bob Hertzberg, Tanya Peacock, who is representative of the technical side with Eco Engineers, Ara Vasquez, environmental justice, Dr. Jack Brower, representing the UC, and then finally Ernesto Medrano representing the LA and OC Building and Construction Trades Council. So we are here. I am happy to answer any questions that you may have. Our contact information is here as well if you have any questions. I will stop sharing my screen so I can see everyone here.
Thank you, Alexis. What is the price that you're seeing these days of hydrogen, and where is that trend going?
So right now, everything that we do and our goal is to be diesel competitive, and that means below $10, at or below $10. It really depends on when you need the hydrogen, how much, and what the timeline is. But we have seen pricing anywhere from $16 down. There are some lower cost options. They're obviously further out. They're a couple of years. They're in various stages of permitting. But for those projects to successfully get built, they need secure offtake, which is part of our strategy, is to find those offtakers for them. Because their supply today, it's not the most price friendly, but their supply today. However, as people continue to transition and more buses come online, you start seeing ports continue to decarbonize, municipal fleets, we know that that supply is just going to continue whittling away. And unless we start building new supply today for the future, hydrogen prices are only going to go up. The only way we can have them go down is really looking ahead and starting today to be able to get those future projects developed. And that's green hydrogen.
So at the moment, you mentioned green hydrogen. At the moment, how much of the supply do you see coming from green hydrogen versus the renewable natural gas versus the biomass?
So today, it is very limited. However, if you're looking at 2026, 2027, you start to see additional production come online, and all that new production is green.
And that's through solar?
Combination, but most of it is electrolysis, yes.
Okay. Any other questions, directors?
I have a concern. In the report that you're doing, are you going to be including on whatever proposals the amount of water that will be affecting in our valley? I know even for green, it can take 9 liters of water. So is the proposals that you're looking into, are they bringing it in and carting it in from being manufactured elsewhere, or are you looking at manufacturing hydrogen here in the valley?
So a lot of our large manufacturing that we're seeing is actually near the Antelope Valley for electrolysis. And that land was previously farmland, which uses significantly more than what they'll be using to produce hydrogen through electrolysis. And we're happy to talk in more detail about the supply that we saw come in and if there was anything specific to the valley. But we are being mindful in our conversations with each one of these producers and the cities that they're located in about the impact that they're going to have, which pathway they have to production, and how it impacts, for example, water supply.
And I think that that'd be important as well. Also the comparison to other fuels, right? So how much would a gallon of gasoline, how much water would that use versus a kilogram of hydrogen, which provides about the same amount of energy? So those comparisons, I think, would be important. Do you have any of those kind of numbers?
Absolutely. It's going to matter. Geographic region matters, and where the supply is coming from matters. You know, for example, electrolysis makes sense in the Coachella Valley, in the Antelope Valley, where it's very sunny. As I mentioned, we're a statewide GPA. We also have supply that is up north that comes from woody waste, where electrolysis wouldn't necessarily make sense. So happy to share more detail on that. We've also done small studies just to ensure that we're tracking, looking at comparisons of water, for example, to residential in comparison to farmland. So happy to discuss any specific projects and the details around those.
I guess, do you have any comparison though for gasoline? How much would a gallon of gasoline use during production of water versus, you know, a kilogram of hydrogen?
For water specifically, we don't. We have a cost analysis, for example, on savings or ensuring that the hydrogen would be cost competitive. But as I mentioned, we have Dr. Jack Brower, who sits on our board, who also oversees the Clean Energy Institute for UC Irvine. And so I am certain that they have done some studies on the water comparison to gasoline production to hydrogen production, and would be happy to resource that.
Okay, thank you. Any other director questions?
Chair of Sunline here.
Yes.
And we have one of their directors as well.
Any questions? Go ahead, Ms. Malata.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation today. My name is Lynn Malata. I'm with the City of Rancho Mirage, but I'm also the chair of Sunline Transit. How many transit agencies do you currently work with at this point in time with hydrogen?
We've spoken to just about everyone, it feels like, at least starting the conversation. We are proud to say that the City of Montebello, who manages their transit agency, just recently joined, as well as the City of Fresno. They also have a transit agency. We have two more cities coming online, the City of Carson and the City of Shafter. They have it on agenda to join the JPA. But as far as providing pricing and working with transit agencies specifically, we have over a dozen, and if not more, that we've spoken with up and down the state.
And to piggyback to that question, the current administration, hydrogen is not the fuel of choice. And so we're very fortunate here in Coachella Valley that one of our congressmen really went to bat for Sunline to get some funding, Congressman Calvert. But I'm wondering if, in fact, do you foresee any interruption with federal assistance?
You know, I can't speak to the hub funding that California is going to receive, but what I can say for First Public Hydrogen is that we are not dependent on any federal funding or any state funding for how we operate as a JPA. What we've heard from other transit agencies is that although hydrogen is not always the fuel of choice, the state of California obviously still has decarbonization goals that they would like to meet. But in addition to that, a lot of the transit funding that was existing is still in place and in play. I don't know that that's true for every transit agency, but a number of folks that we've spoken to, it is. Whether the hubs will get funded, I don't know. You're absolutely right. I can't imagine that there'll be funding past December, but we haven't heard confirmation of that from the DOE.
Sure, Ms. Ross.
So I just want to clarify, because I'm not sure. I think I've heard two different things and I want to make them work. So you're working with hydrogen, or are you delivering hydrogen? I mean, are you actually supplying people who want to go hydrogen 100%?
Yes, we are supplying.
And
we
how
do
you,
not
how do you
produce
get
it though?
How are you getting it to them?
So we did an RFP for the supply, and we currently have an RFP out for the delivery of the hydrogen.
So you are not currently delivering, is that right? I mean, I'm hearing both sides. You said you're delivering, and then you said you have an RFP for a potential delivery service.
Yes, so it depends on the supplier. Today we are not delivering, but if we signed a contract tomorrow where you needed hydrogen delivered tomorrow, we could accommodate that. We do have suppliers that we are working with that provide delivery services already.
And how can an agency, a city, a group understand what your fees would be?
So we are a public agency. Everything is transparent that we do. So the pricing that we would provide to you, you would see the cost of the hydrogen itself that we received from the supplier. And then you would see what our margin would be, which is cost-based. It's a couple of cents added on per kilogram just to cover our cost of operation.
And where would that be seen?
So what we would do is...
You're going to have to tell me where I can actually...
Is there a website? How do they contact you?
Yes. So we can set up a call directly. What we would need to understand from you is how much you need and where you need it to deliver to, what area you're in, and we would provide that pricing to you and you can compare it.
And do you have a self-explanatory website?
We do have a website, yes. It does not have pricing on the website, however. Although we are in the public space, our suppliers are not. And so they are governed by antitrust laws, so we can't share our costs publicly on the website. However, we are able to have one-on-one discussions with each one of the cities and show you that pricing and show you the portfolio of prices that we received.
So honestly, that sounds clunky. You know, are you going to get to a point where you can share that information globally?
Miss Lisa, go ahead.
Oh.
You know, what we can do here as staff is that we can make sure that we can share out the First Public Hydrogen slides and their contact information to the whole committee. So we can, you all can, you know, we can get that. So yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we started this conversation because we were seeing, you know, at Sunline as well, the technology there is a bit outdated. And so we're seeing higher prices than what's on the market now when we're producing here locally. So before, you know, we moved on to producing other forms, we wanted to see what's going on in the rest of the region, right? What other projects are going on? What other collaborations are happening so that we can...
Mine works on that all the time. I just wasn't grasping.
Oh, no, because I think there were some comments that thought that maybe we were already in there. And so we're not a part of that yet. But we wanted to see that option, have them come present to us and see what else is going on in the region and see if we potentially could collaborate there. Do we want to do our own thing? Just get a bit of education on what's going on in the hydrogen space. Yeah. So any other questions or comments? We're good. Ms. Alexis, thank you so much for coming to speak with us. We appreciate all the education you brought to us today and the information about the hydrogen production out there in Lancaster and that collaboration with First Public Hydrogen. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much and look forward to speaking with all of you.
All right, thank you. I will move on to item 7B, rollout of the Shade Trees for Southern California Deserts program. And we have Callie Legakes. I think that's how you say the name, sorry. Yeah.
I have to hold this little mini mic up the whole time?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, my name is Callie Legakis. Very close. I'm a grant writer. I work with the IID on finding urban forestry funding for our desert region. So let's get to it.
Be a little harder, isn't it?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. No?
Good. Okay. There we go. Okay. Perfect. So our grant name is Shade Trees for Southern California Deserts. I'm sure most of you are aware, but there was Inflation Reduction Act funding that came through a few years ago now. The Forestry Service received $5 billion out of this pot of funding, and then nationwide they gave $1.5 billion towards urban and community forests. So if you're wondering what that looks like, that is mainly for planting trees and replanting forests that have been burned down, education programs, research on how to plant trees, why we're planting trees, the carbon, all of that goes into it. So CAL FIRE received $30 million out of this funding pot as pass-through funding, and then they created a grant program which IID applied and was awarded for. So just shy of $3 million, and that's what you're looking at here, Shade Trees for Southern California Deserts. Our goal is 6,000 trees by 2028. It will be in the Imperial and Eastern Riverside counties. So we're looking at 15-gallon sized trees. So that is easiest way to explain it, not a baby tree, not a full-grown adult. So it's a tree that most likely when planted in the desert will be able to survive if planted in the right location. So we have 3,000 going into public spaces, that's parks, right-of-ways, anywhere we work with the cities to plant. And then 3,000 residential. So we're talking about backyards, front yards of residential homes. Okay. We partnered with CVAG on this grant application so that we can better service the Coachella Valley area. So IID, as you know, services both the Imperial and Eastern Riverside counties. However, CVAG, they were a great partner so that we can actually fully service some of these areas that we can't necessarily reach with IID service. So we also have Desert Recreation District and Alianza that will be helping us with the on-the-ground efforts to reach out to some of these residents that might not normally find out about a program like this. So that's a lot of overhead information about the granting program, but just to explain kind of the idea why we're doing this and the importance of it. So everyone knows the importance of planting a tree, right? It's not anything innovative. However, planting a tree in the desert is a little bit trickier. You have to find the right tree, plant it in the right location. You have to worry about irrigation and water. And then in some communities, how you're going to pay for that water. And so a lot of times people just say, let's forget about it. Let's do desert landscape. We're not going to even plant trees. However, research shows that planting trees in today's environment is incredibly important. So we are here to help bridge that gap. We are incredibly education-based. We are going to be going out in the field, talking to residents, community members, giving them hands-on education, teaching them how to plant a tree, why to plant a tree, where they should plant it, and then how to keep it alive, hopefully for years to come. So irrigation, like I mentioned, is very important for this program. On the residential properties, we'll be installing, hopefully, tree diapers. So that's exactly what it sounds like. It is essentially a diaper that's placed at the bottom of the tree and then absorbs water and helps to keep the soil moist. So in fall of this year, so in the next couple months, we'll be starting our plantings and we will be focusing on the Saltland Sea area. That's the area we've designated as of the most need. So we will be installing tree diapers with the trees planted there. And it's kind of going to be our prototype for this program, and we're going to see how it goes, but research looks like it will be good. And then for public spaces, we'll be using traditional drip irrigation and then any other type of irrigation that our partnering cities would like to use. And part of this, we will be doing tree steward training and certification courses. So our team will be going to each partnering city and hosting like a community night where we have members of the community that are interested come out and do a certification to become a tree steward. So essentially it's all this information I'm giving you, but in an easily digestible format. So where they can go out and they can select a tree at Lowe's or Home Depot or a local nursery if you're in the Coachella area, and they'll feel confident about planting it in their yard. And another aspect of this program, the mapping and research portion. So Cal Fire has identified this program as a great candidate for its pilot program. So they are working on researching and recording in remote desert areas like Saltland Sea, where they can plant trees in backyards, front yards, and then know they're going to be taken care of for years to come. So what we will be doing is using a combination of LIDAR satellite technology and then on the ground, hands-on inventory type, taking a picture, recording what it sizes on a yearly basis so that we can kind of get a grasp on whether or not a program like this works in our area, if we can keep the trees alive and then actually show not just the environmental benefit, but the monetary benefit of doing something like this for our community, which we are believing is going to be very great. Okay, that's a very short and concise little program, but yes, question.
The beauty of the tree diaper.
We're thinking about a year, so it's going to help it get through that first year of infancy. And so kind of to speak to that, we plant in seasons, obviously. So in the Coachella Valley, I noticed there are some areas where you have landscape companies that come in and they will plant year round. However, a program like this, we want to teach residents that it's better practice, especially in your yard, to plant in seasons. So our planting season, given, you know, the weather breaks, it'll be first week of October through usually the first or second week of December, and then kick back up in February until probably early May. So during those two planting seasons is when we'd like to plant. And the goal is that we work on residential plantings in the fall and we install the tree diaper. And then it gives our trees a chance to really establish and to, you know, have deeper roots by the time we get to that insane heat in May. And then also that tiny bit of frost, but that's usually not a problem. Yes.
So I represent the city of Palm Desert, and we only have a very small section with IID. So based upon what you've said, you have grant funding for the city of Palm Desert as well?
Yes. So thank you that you explained that much better than I did earlier. So we are working with CBAG so that we can make sure and work with all of the cities in this area. So if we had just been IID, we work with only IID service area. However, IID wants to be able to service the entire Eastern Riverside County. So that's why CBAG has become involved.
Okay.
So yes. So yes.
With our city staff to get the word out to our residents.
We will be, yes. And to speak to that as well, we are taking this grant in portions. So this fall, as you can probably assume, we did get hit by the funding pause. And so we just now started back up. So we originally were supposed to have started last December. However, now we are a little bit behind schedule. So we are going to focus on the Salton Sea area first. So we'll be working on a schedule and then reach out to each city to let them know what planting season they will be receiving trees. Thank you.
Questions? Yeah. No, it's good. Supervisor. Here, real quick, I appreciate the effort and thank you, IRD, for working with CBAG and making this work. Now, this has always been a struggle when it comes to shade, as far as I can remember. And I appreciate the fact that we're not only talking about the Eastern Coachella Valley, but we're talking about the whole IID area, service area. And so, you know, there are areas within cities, obviously, that need it. You just mentioned Palm Desert. And there's areas like Thousand Palms. And I heard you say Salton Sea, which obviously does need these efforts. But I just want to make sure that there's, to the extent that we can, equity throughout the entire area. To the extent that we can, ensure that cities and incorporate areas receive their fair share of, you know. And so talking to the folks, talking to the communities, I think that's one thing that's great. I'm just wondering, from your point of view, have you already decided in your grant, for example, or listed in your grant examples of certain areas or streets for that matter, or targeted communities versus the entire city or entire unincorporated area? Or is that still fair game?
So it's still fair game. We haven't decided exact specific parks and general areas. That being said, when we did apply for this funding, we did want to focus on disadvantaged areas first. So this, we are not planning to give out a completely equal share to each city. So as you mentioned, there's some areas that are definitely more in need than others. So we will be servicing those with additional trees before the areas that aren't so much in need. So yes, to answer your question, it is fair game. Yes, of course.
When do you begin this process?
You want to step in? So our program begins this fall. So we'll be planting in the Salton Sea area. So we will begin conversations probably within the next couple months with other cities to work on a timeline and game plan.
Okay, so you've already had these conversations with the community of Salton Sea, or not yet, or Alianza is actually handling that?
Alianza will be handling that with us. Yes, so we have not had all those conversations. We began conversations with Salton Sea because that was kind of the area that we designated in our grant application as of intense need right now. And so that is why it's our first priority.
Yeah, you know, the only other thing I can just say, I know it's not your fault, or not at a local level per se, but the Cal Enviro screen only goes so far.
Yeah.
I think that it's missing quite a bit when we're talking about other areas that also have underserved communities, even though potentially maybe a little bit more affluent, but nonetheless, so there are communities within that, those cities that need support. And many times they're not captured in a Cal Enviro screen, but that's a whole other conversation.
No, I completely agree with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you. I think if Tom Kirk was here, he would express his frustration with the Cal Enviro screen as well. So I'll be brief. We are constrained to some degree as to how we're going to prioritize communities. But just to be clear, the Salton Sea area, we're talking about North Shore, Mecca, and Thermal. We'll be focusing on that area.
I was wondering, Emmanuel, like the actual communities within, like Mecca's pretty big, right? And so is North Shore. So. Like, is it spread out, right? I'm just trying to understand that, but I guess we'll figure that out
on time. Yeah, and our team will be working with Cali closely to make sure we have a equitable distribution plan that adheres to the grant requirements, but that we get out as many as we can.
Thank you. Oh, Director Hamby, do you have a comment? Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to share appreciation and thanks to CVAG staff in particular who have worked for the last 3 years with IID on this opportunity. We first clocked this in the Inflation Reduction Act bill language 3 years ago. There was, throughout the past 3 years, this is our second grant effort. The first one, we were not successful, but there was a lot of learnings that CVAG and IID staff were able to take away and make for this very successful grant that I think was, Manuel could correct me if I'm wrong here, but $3 million to benefit shade and quality of life across our shared region. So that's our commitment at IID, and we're very thankful for all the work that's been put on between IID and CVAG staff to be able to bring these much needed resources across our entire region. Thanks.
Thank you, Director Hamby. Any other questions or comments? Ms. Freakin?
Brief comment. I don't know if you guys have been working with other entities, but KDI, they already are working on creating a master plan or a shade master plan, and they've actually identified areas within Mecca, North Shore, Thermal Oasis. They've worked with the community. They've done different meetings, outreach, all of that. So I think it'd be really good for you guys to also take a look at partnering with them since they already have the plan and they're working on releasing it soon, but I think they would be a good partner also.
That's the Shade Master Plan?
Shade Equity Master Plan.
Okay.
They haven't released it yet, but it would be good to have a conversation with them and get to see the information.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for your presentation.
Okay. If anyone wants to come plant trees with us, you're more than welcome to.
Definitely. Count me in. All right. We have a 7C, Election of Energy and Sustainability Committee Officers, and I'll pass it on to Erica.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Probably loud enough. Without this, but this is an annual ritual here at this committee where we elect our officers. Tom apologizes. He had to go to a conference, so sorry he's not here to do this item. Our chair right now is Councilmember Ortiz, and your vice chair is Mayor Evans of La Quinta. We'll open the floor to nominations.
Make the motion to leave it as is.
Second.
I'll close the floor for nominations unless there's any other inspiration. Okay.
We're willing. We're willing. Because this is one that everybody clams to be chair and vice chair for us, but as demonstrated on the list. So.
And we know everybody wants to go to the IREN meetings all the time. So.
It's our sandwiches. You can say it.
No, but I do want to thank our CVAC staff for all the help. And
we haven't been voted on yet.
We do have a motion in a second.
Campaign speech.
No.
There's a motion and a second on the floor. All those in favor?
Aye.
And then we do have Director Hamby on lawn.
Aye.
There you go. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Blythe is stepped out.
Blythe?
Stepped out.
Yeah. You're doing acceptance speech now?
Yeah, now we could do acceptance. No, I just want to thank Jacob for and the rest of our staff for all their work on not just this energy and sustainability committee, but also the Inland Regional Energy Network, which has been going on for a couple of years now, and we're expanding those energy efficiency programs throughout the valley. So just wanted to say thank you for all the help on these two commissions. Thank you. All right, and then we'll move on to public comment on non-agenda items. Do we have any public comments?
Chair, we do not.
No member.
Okay,
just very quickly, I know that to reiterate, redundant regarding air quality, but I'm not sure if Emma was able to say that the event, the Dust Summit, is going to be November 6th at UCR Palm Desert campus. I'm sure if you're aware of that, and that's going to start at 5, and one panel will deal with local folks. For example, we're looking at the ag community, Tom, we get CVB. And then the other panel will hear from experts in the field of dust, if you will. We wanted to create a context for people to understand what's going on, and then obviously the experts to try to answer these questions that we have and concerns that we have now. We also are asking for recommendations. And there are already efforts taking place as we speak that will be announced very soon. So just want to put that out.
Time frame on the 6th?
Between 5 and 8.
P.M.
Yes. And it may be 4 to 8, but right now we're doing 5 to 8.
Okay.
It all depends on how much Q&A there is, to be honest with you. We're going to go longer if we need to. But we expect all of AQMD here, EPA, and a bunch of other groups here.
Awesome. Sounds great. We'll see you there. Any other public comments? Nothing. All right. Move on to announcements. Next meeting for this committee will be on Thursday, November 13th. And the next executive committee meeting will be Monday, September 29th. And we'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Thank you all for being here.
All right.